you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
As you can tell, I'm batching out podcast recordings today. I've got Chris for like 3 hours, and I'm using all 3 hours of her time because her brilliance is absolutely amazing. So if you're just tuning in, let me just say that we're doing a new process that we learned by kind of getting some feedback of what our listeners and our members at the Everyday Innovator Tribe, what you wanted. So we are doing two things. One is, I'm bringing on brilliant business leaders like Chris to interview me so that we can dig into innovation and human-centered innovation, how we do it, and they could add their brilliance to it as well. So a little bit of a different format. And we're doing these live streams, not because I expect you to watch all four that we've now done in a row, but because some of the feedback I got was, hey, Tamara, you record this stuff and you talk about it and you're like, reference a podcast, but it takes 4 months for it to go live because we only do one a week. So can't do them all at once. So we're doing it this way too, so that you can have it here if you want to catch it earlier. So we're going to be talking about something called they syndrome. And wow, do I see a lot of it. So before I dig into that, Chris, I'm so excited you're here again. Share with everybody who you are and then we'll dig in.
Yeah, real quickly, my name is Chris Besh. My company is called Choose People, and we support organizations with those really tough people challenges that cause all sorts of trouble with their culture. So we deal with gossip, drama, silos, apathy, entitlement, all that good jazz. But let's go ahead and jump into this session on the power of the word they.
So powerful.
Oh, it's a sneaky word, isn't it, Tamara? Infamous.
It is. Here's the thing about that word. We use it without realizing it. So that's number one. We're not actually intentionally trying to be victims or blaming others, but that's actually what happens. Mm-hmm. In innovation, it happens a lot because this is what I hear a lot of. They don't get it. They don't think it'll work. They won't do anything with it. They. And I think when they say that to me, what they expect me to say is, right, jerks. I mean, not innovative. But what I end up saying in response is, they aren't the problem, you're the problem. And here's why. You have to own innovation, and you have to own being a leader of innovation. You have to own creating a ripple effect and a way of communicating that allows other people on board for the innovation. What we tend to do is actually shut it down when we're communicating innovation. And I think that accountability and ownership are essential to innovation. I don't think we can have a solid culture, definitely not a culture of innovation, if we don't have accountability. And the word they, interestingly enough, is the opposite of accountability. It is blame pushing onto other people. I want to share a story with you that I heard, and I reference him in the book, although I don't think I shared this story in the book. I shared a different one. But I had a chance to see him speak, and then I interviewed him for my book, and then we became colleagues, friends. So his name is David Marquette, and he's in the Navy. He was a captain of nuclear submarine ship. Let me make sure I say it right. I think it was the USS Santa Fe, if I said it right. And when he took over as commander of the ship, anyone who's in the military is probably going to die at my use of like horrible language. Like, I'm not a military person, so bear with me, but hopefully the point comes across. So when he took over as commander of the ship, it had a really toxic culture. Now, you can only imagine, right? Like, a toxic culture on a good day when we're on Zoom calls all the time or in the office together is bad enough. Imagine being trapped underwater in a toxic culture where it's full of blame. So he comes in, and a lot of things happen, but he shared one story on stage that really stuck with me. And again, his name is David Marquette, and his book is, I think it's Turn the Ship Around. I will put a link in the show notes. It's absolutely brilliant. But he talked about how one of the things he did is he removed the word they from their vocabulary. And kind of here's how he was sharing the example. So he'd go to someone and say, is this blah, blah, blah fixed yet? And the person would want to say, no, they didn't get me the parts on time. Maintenance didn't get me the parts on time. right? But he removed that. So what that person was then forced to say was, no, I don't have the parts I need yet. And while that sounds subtle, the distinction is massive. And it forced, in a good way, a culture of accountability that they didn't have. You couldn't blame anybody else for you not having what you needed, for being in the wrong place, for doing it wrong, for being brilliant. Like, either side, he would not let them use the word they. I thought that was one of the most brilliant stories I ever heard. He said that the culture went from one of blaming to one of accountability purely by eliminating that word. And I think in innovation, they becomes a crutch for why you didn't push something forward. They didn't get it, so I couldn't do it. Well, really, what you're saying is you didn't push hard enough or find the angle that worked, right? And so everyone knows, I take full accountability for my own and try not to use they, because at the end of the day, I'm the one that needs to get that idea going. I'm the one that needs to shift the perspective. And if I can't do that in the other people, and I'll share a story about that in a minute, I'm the one that does something wrong, not everybody else.
Oh my goodness, Tamara. I have not
when I talk about this topic.
Oh my gosh. I just love that. And right, they is so toxic for innovation, but like you just pointed out, it's incredibly toxic for culture as well, in which there's like no personal responsibility. And when you ask about like, who is they?
Right.
Like, who is they? Yeah, and people are like, well, you know, and it gets all weird. But I'm really curious, like, you know, what's one of your favorite examples of like a team getting over the they syndrome? Because I think, again, it's really powerful to be thoughtful about like what would it look like if we remove that from our vocabulary. But I'm curious just like if you have like another story that kind of demonstrates that.
So let me share with you something that I did wrong. Because in that story, I figured out how to remove the they and get to a place where the ideas could actually have momentum. So, and let me just say that what I learned is that, I mean, I think we all kind of intuitively know this, but that words are really powerful. And removing they matters, but also how we communicate our innovation can force us into an us versus they situation, or it can create a we situation. So let me share the story. So and this is, I go into much more depth in this in my book too, but here's what happened. So I'm hired by this global baby care company to reinvent baby care. Like, I'm so excited. And at this time, right, baby care hadn't seen like any innovation in God knows how long. It was like baby powder, shampoo, like the usual, right? I mean, it must have been 30 years since anything new would come up at this point. But this company was really intent on moving into the future. They're a progressive company. Mm-hmm. So I assembled a crack team. For 6 months, we play with kid toys. We check out formula. We talk to dads, which at that time was the first time the company had ever done that, like in kind of the depth that we did. And after that, we come up with a range of brilliant new product innovation that is going to transform the marketplace for them, right? And there's close-in stuff that they can do with the manufacturing and the products they have. There's further out stuff that's going to like stretch them. Maybe they need to acquire some stuff or create some new assets. I was so proud. And these ideas came from my team, from customers. Like, it was pure brilliance, Chris, brilliance. So we all fly to headquarters to present, and we shuffle into the CEO's conference room. I know you've been in one of these rooms.
Yeah.
Like, the wood table takes up too much of the room, the one big conference table with that little podium, that like faux podium at the front. And on the wall are all the oil paintings of CEOs past, and not one of them are smiling. They're all like, right?
So, yeah, it's brutal.
It's so brutal. So that's problem number one. But hey, you know what? Your environment is never optimal for innovation. So deal with it, right? That's a they thing too. Like, well, they didn't set it up right. Yeah, it's never set up right, is it? So, I mean, has there ever been a day when you've been like, everything's working flawlessly and perfectly? No. So we're there. And my client is to my right. And then next to him is his boss. And then every mucky muck is there, like the VP of this department, the head of that department, right? They're all there to hear. These ideas are going to take them into the future. And my team starts going through these ideas. We have the most beautiful PowerPoint slide you've ever seen. Our ideas are stunning on our deck. Deck, by the way, for those of you who aren't in the corporate world, is, I don't know why, lingo for your PowerPoint slides. Don't know where that came from. So I'm standing up there, and I, Chris, am like a mama bear. I'm beaming with pride. My team is going through these ideas. I'm so proud of what they created. But over to my right, I hear this whispering. And I look over and it's not my boss or my client, it's his boss. And here's the thing about him. I don't remember his name, but every time he spoke, his massive mustache moved. It was huge. And so with every idea my team presented, he would lean into our client and go, didn't we try that already and we squashed it? Didn't so-and-so look in that and it didn't work? Didn't R&D try that and it failed? Didn't a consultant give us that and we shelved it? Didn't another competitor, right? He squashed the life out of, thank you, that was the response I've been looking for my whole life. He squashed the life out of every single idea we had. And that was the longest, angriest plane ride home. And I got super sucked into the they syndrome. Well, why did they hire us if they didn't want to listen to our ideas? Well, why is my client even leading innovation if he can't get his team on board? Why is Mustache Man even in the meeting? He's obviously too jaded to even be there. Why did everybody else sit and say nothing, right? It was like, it was they galore for me. And fortunately for everybody, it was a long plane ride home. And by the time I landed in Denver, I realized that the fault didn't lie with they. It was actually with me. Because here's what happened. My team and I and my client, we had just spent 6 months thinking about this, right? Pushing the boundaries, testing out new ideas, being in the marketplace. And then we shuffled into this boardroom and we expected everybody else to get it because we'd put together a beautiful PowerPoint presentation. And how often have we been in a meeting or we've been communicating our ideas with someone and we think the idea should stand on its own and they don't get it, right? They're not on the same page as us. Why? Well, they're not thinking about the things we're thinking all day long. They're not, they've got their own things to deal with. And then we're coming in cold and being like, ta-da! And we're pushing our brilliance onto them. And it creates an us versus them. And then on top of that, when we present our ideas, here's what we typically do. I'm going to use this water bottle, my little blue water bottle. So I've seen everyday objects. So I'll go to you and I'll say, hey, Chris, I have an idea for this water bottle. It knows my thumbprint, so it adds vitamins. It knows what I need, and it heats up when I need it and cools down when I need it, and it's got a no-spill factor to it. What do you think? And in telling you what do you think, I'm forcing you into an up or down vote, and you either love it or you hate it. And we're human, so guess what? We're going to hate it. Then you become they, right? You're the they. And by the way, I've done this a myriad of times in a probably 500-600 times in front of audiences, right? During keynotes. And inevitably, here's what happens. So let's say there's 1,000 people in the audience. 4 people are like, I like it, Tamara. And then like the rest of them, the other 996, whatever it is, are like, not so Tamara. And that's what happens to you, right? How many times have you been in that? And then the 4 people that smile at me, my response is to be like, yeah, you get it. Let's go. Everybody else is a yes butter. They don't understand it, right? But first of all, that's not true. And second, I need them to move forward. So what I discovered is that not only do I take they out of my language, but if I actually shift my language and how I communicate, I can shift my outcomes and get out of this kind of blame, us versus them, they don't get it culture. So what I learned from Mustache Man that day, by the way, if Mustache Man, if you're out there and you know, like you're like, oh my God, that was me. I was in that meeting. Thank you, because you taught me this. That if you change your language, you change your outcomes and you get out of they syndrome. So what I've learned to do that I hinted at the other podcast, because we kind of got on this tangent, is when I have my idea, I say, hey, here's my idea. What would you do to strengthen it? And when I say that, wheels start to turn and people feel included. And it's no longer me versus them. It is about us figuring this out and moving forward. Or I say, hey, what holes do you see and how would you fill it? Right? So that's for that kind of analytical person who's always like, boo, 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 bad ideas. All right, tell me what holes you see, Chris, but, and then tell me how to fill them. So I'm taking you out of the they seat and I'm putting you into a we seat. What would this need to include to work for you? Right? So those 3 ways of communicating ideas gets you out of the they versus us mentality. And it gives you more accountability and more ownership for not just having the ideas, but for communicating those ideas in a way to get buy-in. And that's the part where we see the breakdown. That's the part where people start to get into victim mindset and they versus us. I think we make the mistake of thinking that our ideas stand on their own. Like, well, the idea is brilliant. Don't you get it? And they don't. Of course they don't, because they're thinking about other things like I learned that day. And, you know, I'll tell you, just looping back to the story, I had to call my client and be like, hey, I think I screwed up and here's why. I think I thought that they would get it without any like conversation, any like it, it became this one-way tennis match is how I explained it. I felt like I was lobbing tennis balls over the fence and they were like, duck and weave, right? So we have to get out of they, and we have to get into a language of innovation that really allows us to get people on board with the conversation. And that's how we create momentum with ideas. And that's how we get accountability. And that's why I think taking accountability is so important. Otherwise, you could have a million ideas, but if you can't figure out how to be a leader and step up and move the needle forward, I'm not sure how much it matters. And blaming them for not getting you when you're not being clear and you're not being inclusive, that doesn't work for me. So there.
I love you, Tamara. And I do, I want to highlight something that, and I just want you to share it again, which is, again, some of this, like, some of the language that you then use around, like, and you said this before, and I just love it, rather than just asking, what do you think?
Yeah.
Right? So you shared a few different examples. So one is, like, what do you see that could strengthen my idea? Uh-huh. And then what were the other, I believe you shared two other pieces.
Yep. What would you do to strengthen it? Mm-hmm. One. Number two is, what do I need to include for this to work? Or what do I need to include to get a yes? The third one is, and this is for the hyper, like, pew, pew, pew ones, right? For them, it's, what holes do you see and how would you fill them? Just ask them, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they'll tell you the holes. You know they're going to. So let's have a conversation about how to fill those holes.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I had someone come up to me after a session once and say, Tamara, I love these. I've got a boss who's initial brick wall to me is always, we can't invest in that. It'll cost too much, right? Like, that is the way they shut everything down. Mm. And she said, they, or he, I think it was he, but same thing, right? It's still part of the they. He shuts everything down and I don't want to bring ideas to him. And first of all, shame on him, right? That's a whole nother conversation. But I said to her, listen, if you know that's going to happen, why not do something about it? Really? Like, why allow that brick wall to happen? So what I told her was, the next time you go to him with an idea, share with it and stop. And before he can start, like, when you start to open up for conversation, say, what do I need to include to make this worth an investment? I'm sure it's missing something. So what do I need to include? So she went and she did that. Sure enough, she called me a week later and she said, Tamara, you're not going to believe this. I got approval for my first idea. Woo-hoo! She said, I said to him that. And he said, well, I can't in the way it is now, but if you included these three things, I'd consider it. She went and included those three things. She went back to him and he did it. So he got the money. Mm-hmm. So that took her out of they, but she had to own the fact that, hey, maybe she has some accountability. And if you know the person's always going to shut you down, then isn't it on you to deal with it a little bit differently too? I'm not saying they're right, but mm-hmm. I'm saying we can only control us. So be a leader and step up.
I love that, Tamara. And there is this, like, this aspect of the they, that if you don't speak to their concerns, if you don't address their concerns, like you just said with this gentleman and the budget, you try to avoid them or hope that they don't bring them up again, like, it's not going to work, right? You do have to step up and deal with whatever obstacles are in the space or concerns or challenges that people have. Yeah. So where you're not at the effect of, right, of the concern, like, you proactively address it.
You know, it was interesting. This is a little bit on the personal side, but it relates to they syndrome. I was really proud of my sister. So I was talking to her the other day. My sister has two kids that are in grade school. And we were having this whole conversation about everything that's happening with schools. We've been getting a lot of emails that they're trying to be really communicative. And it's like, we're going to go to blended learning next year, but stay tuned for what that means. Like, we're still working through COVID and blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
So my sister said to me, I'm looking at solutions for homeschooling and other options. Now, that's not, homeschooling is not my choice, but she was talking about, like, if this is a matter of they're only in school every other week, I'm going to look at other options. And then she said to me, I cannot have any more conversations with people where they complain about how the government, the schools, the blah, blah, blah are dealing with it. She said, I can't control that. I have to figure out how to work in it and around it. And I was so proud of her, because to me, that spoke to accountability of, like, I have to drive innovation in the way that I can, because I can't control that, right? I can only control this. Yeah. And like I said, I was just really proud of her for that. And I think that now we're working in teams where we have to deal with people. But I think it's really important for us to recognize that, like, hey, the accountability starts with us. And if we want to drive innovation with our teams, we've got to take ownership, not just for the ideas, but for the implementation of those ideas. And that takes some work around accountability and ownership, around communication, around your style with people, around relationships, all of that. And if you know you're going to hit the same brick wall over and over again, which is kind of my point about the COVID thing, like, then figure out a way around it, because the brick wall is coming. You know it's happening.
Yeah. Brilliant. And I love that your sister did that, because I too, I'm with your sister. Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Done having the conversations about all the things that we can't impact, and like really getting present to like, what can we?
Right.
And go from there. Yeah.
I love that you said that, because that is exactly how to look at it. Well, what can I impact? And here's the thing I'd say, because I know there are some people out there watching or listening who are thinking, yeah, but my boss will never say yes, or that person will always shut it down because they're jaded. I have on our website under the Burst of Innovation, like the blog page, a whole Burst of Innovation that I did around the getting legacy thinkers on board for change, how to speak to them in a way that actually changes their mindset and gets them from yesterday to today to the future. So I would go look at that. But if you know that's a roadblock, why not go around it? Like, if you're driving and the road is closed, you don't just stop. You still got to get to that house, right? So you just go right and then go left and then come around the other way. So there's always an innovative solution and path out there. You just got to think differently about it. That's all.
Well, and I'll just put one, just because of our last podcast, like that kind of loops into this too, right? Like, let's say you have one of those always never people, which, by the way, that's probably not actually true, even though that's your experience of them. Right. But there's an opportunity to go to that person and say, you know, you request that we be innovative, and I'm 100% on board. I'm bringing with you my most creative ideas.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I see is that you're really concerned about budget every time I come, or that, you know, you tend to answer this way.
Roadblock keeps coming up.
Yeah. And I don't know if you're present to, like, you're requesting innovation, but then this is always the obstacle you bring. And so I actually want to co-create with you, like, how can we address that obstacle so that innovation can be effective? Because right now it just gets stopped. Every time we get here, it gets stopped. And I know you say you want innovation, but it keeps getting stopped here. And so how do I support you in, like, getting that figured out?
Let me add to that, because this came up a lot on our innovation jam session this morning in the tribe. Mm-hmm. So I asked everybody before. So this is my first group, my founding members group, and we did this bonus jam session with them only. So it was a small group of us, and I got to ask them ahead of time. I know, it's amazing. I was so excited. They're an incredible group of people, and they're really working hard to make an impact. But I asked them in the beginning, why did you join? Tell me what you're looking to get out of it. I want to have that in the back of my mind as I build the exercises, the template framework for this session. So most of them said something to the effect of, I feel so overwhelmed in what I do that I can't get to innovation. I feel so buried in my tasks that I can't get to innovation. And when I heard this over and over in a different way, I actually spent probably 15 minutes in an exercise that I gave them around understanding that innovation happens in the space with what you have right in front of you. So to go to your example with the budget, my question there is, well, how can I think differently about the budget and how we allocate it? Or how can I think differently about the resources I need to do what I want to do? Is there a way to do it in a streamlined way? We think of innovation as like I can do it when these things happen, right? After I get through the tasks, or after I get approval, or, like, you know, if the budget is 100% approved and everything we want. But innovation applies to that challenge too. So not only how can I come and co-create with you, but also how do we think differently about the budget so that we both get what we need out of this? Innovation is, so our definition at Launch Street is thinking differently about what's right in front of you to create a competitive advantage. And that what's right in front of you, I think, is the key there, because it is about the budget, the resources, the innovation that you're trying to create, the ideas. So I think part of what creates the they syndrome is thinking that innovation has to be this big blue skies blowout thing. So when you don't get approval for that, you get all like, it's never going to happen. I might be going over time, so one quick story. I interviewed this woman, Heather, and Heather worked for Hyundai, which is well known for structure and rigidity, right? And at this time, what she really wanted to do was create an innovation lab for them where they could come and collaborate and innovate. But she knew that that wasn't going to happen out of the gate. It was not the culture of the company, period. It was a wonderful company, but that wasn't their culture, right? Their culture was the opposite. So first she went to her boss and said, how about you give me 2 hours to work on this? And then they showed a little milestone of success, right? Just a nugget. And then she went and said, how do I have a day, right? And then because they got a little success here, she got the next step. And then she said, how can I put together a team, right? And then the next step. And then before you know it, I think it took her a couple years to get to the lab, but she knew, right, that it wasn't from here to here. It was sometimes I got to work in baby steps. And I think that's also a brilliant example of getting rid of they, because she could have easily fallen into the they trap and said, well, they don't get it. They're not going to let me have my lab. But it's because she took accountability and ownership, she recognized that the way to get it done was baby steps there.
Love that. It is the bite-sized steps.
It's yeah. Perfect. I love her story. She was great.
Well, is there anything, Tamara, that you want to leave us with? Any final thoughts about they?
Here's what I'd say. I'd say two things. One, remove they from your vocabulary and try, see what it feels like as David Marquette did with his team. The minute you catch yourself, reframe what you're about to say. It changes your entire being when you do that, and it'll change the culture. And the second thing I say is really remember it. If you change your language, you change your outcomes. Change how you present your thinking, and you will get to more momentum. You'll get to a more of a we place. I hate to say just a we place, because I'm not just talking about inclusivity. I'm talking about actually getting approval and momentum and buy-in for the things you're trying to move forward.
Excellent. Thank you, Tamara. This has been amazing.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.